sometimes you're away from your feet. Rise to a new day with each soul to feed.
Hello, and welcome to the Enlightened Medicine Show with Dr. Valerie Olmsted, the holographic physician. My special guest tonight is Dr. George Swartz. Welcome to the show, Dr. Swartz.
Thank you very much, Bella. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, it's so much fun I get to talk to you. Listeners, this guy is brilliant. He is so much fun to talk to. And tonight he's going to give us an update on the Morgellons disease stuff. And I've just been reading some stuff on the web. Oh, my gosh, Dr. Swartz, this is just, it's getting scarier and scarier.
Well, I think so. I think the way I look at it these days is that it's a leverage. Mm-hmm. You know, and we all know that there's a problem of global warming. We know there's a problem of massive pollution throughout the industry. And we know that the Yucatan Bay is polluted, the Sea of China. You know what I mean? We're aware of the pollution, but it doesn't affect it. You know, people, but suddenly there is a disease which I believe is related to all this pollution.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the so-called Morgellons disease, bad name.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we talked about that. It's a bad name because it got started and people, you know, thought it was delusional, but it is not delusional by any means.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, it's a parasite.
Mm-hmm.
And we've isolated stages of this parasite. And it's a, it goes through multiple life stages and can cause serious destruction.
Yeah, why don't you explain for the listeners what the symptoms are? Like, how would they know if they have this?
All right, well, I'll tell you about it, because the basic three, there are basic three,
mm-hmm.
and one is skin lesions, the second is a creeping, crawling sensation
mm-hmm.
around the legs or scalp particularly, and the third is the presence of fibers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not every patient has all three, particularly men who may be kind of thick skinned, may not develop much in the way of skin lesions and may not develop much in the way of fibers.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly, those three things serve to define the disease: the creeping, crawling sensation, the presence of fibers, and the presence of skin lesions. Now, the skin lesions are a particular sort, and they are relatively non-healing.
Mm-hmm.
That's because there's a foreign body within them, and they produce some sort of, almost like they call them a volcanic appearance,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that they're not healing well, and the outside kind of starts to heal, but the inside just doesn't heal.
Yeah.
Finally, you know, it starts to heal, but then it, you know, keeps on opening and erupting. I had a call for a 22-year-old just yesterday who had 50 to 100 of these lesions around her body.
Eey.
Now, the problem is, of course, that it's a parasite which goes everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
We have also detected brain lesions, and there's a particular pattern seen on MRI. Magnetic resonance is a test of the brain scan. And it's an increased signal intensity in the periventricular areas. Now, what that means is next to the areas in which there's cerebrospinal fluid, which makes sense because this is kind of a water animal,
mm-hmm.
water parasite. Now, we've seen it. I mean, this is no mystery,
mm-hmm.
you know, to us anymore. It's just a question of identifying it and treating the darn thing because we do have effective treatments.
Mm-hmm.
But we've seen it in its egg form. We've seen it in its larval form. It then grows into this strange parasitic. It looks almost spider-like. And from this spider-like contraption comes fibers. Now, there's been some people, and I think that, you know, I don't know which planet they inhabit, but we've tested these fibers. These fibers are not strange, I mean, in the sense that they can withstand all sorts of heat. I mean, that's just mystical nonsense.
Oh, you're talking about the Martian glass bodies, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it just doesn't exist. Or if it does exist, it has nothing to do with the production of this parasite, which produces
mm-hmm.
a fiber, which is silk-like and easily burned, and perhaps has something to do with cocoon, or perhaps has something to do with interparasite communication. One of the characteristic colors, by the way, is blue,
mm-hmm.
which is unusual in nature.
Yeah. Yeah.
So from this parasite, Valerie, as you know, it then begins to keratinize after this state of fiber production, and then it begins to keratinize and begins to have a shell and begins its creeping crawling around different areas of the body.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm sorry I interrupted you. Forgive me. I was just rambling on there.
Oh, no, it's okay. I'm sitting here looking at a page on my computer right now where they have photograph after photograph after photograph of these fibers. And you know, in clumps that they've pulled out of people, there's blue, there's red, there's white, there's brown, and you can see regular hair fibers that are kind of twined in with them.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the strangest things is, like one of the patients is a natural blonde, and suddenly she's getting thick black, what looks like black hair sprouting out of her scalp. Well, it's not hair. It's something, some production of this fiber. As soon as she starts touching it, it begins to withdraw into its space.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one
yeah.
of the things we've discovered is that after the creepy crawly, if it were just that, you know, one would say, well, goodness, a skin problem, big deal. But this thing bores into the skin and causes these foreign body reactions, and then it can bore into the liver. Spleen enlargement is very, very common. And it can then go through another metamorphosis or another stage where it becomes worm-like. And at that point, it can make people terribly, terribly anemic. When I say terribly anemic, one of our patients needs blood transfusions every 8 weeks.
Wow. That's
so this is not a benign disease at all. The other thing is teeth. If this is in the mouth, the teeth begin eroding at a very rapid rate. And we've seen, you know, when people have guarded their teeth with $30,000 and $50,000 worth of dental work, and we've seen the teeth be destroyed literally in a space of 12 months.
Wow.
Another lady at the age of 46 had her spine collapse. And when we took a CT scan, it just looked like a mass, a mass of bone. Its normal architecture was lost. So it's a disease which needs intensive treatment.
Yeah, you know, I was just talking to a guy who heads the Canadian research website, and he was visiting in Sedona, and he said that they did either a knee or a hip replacement on the lady in San Francisco, the one that kind of blew the story all wide open, and they said that they had found these fibers twined all the way through the bone.
Well, I'm not surprised at that, because the organism then goes to another stage where the fibers. We had one of our patients who underwent a gallbladder removal, and the gallbladder was filled with fibers.
Eek.
So it's not unusual, but the fibers come from a particular stage of the organism, which is not the most destructive stage at all.
Yeah, I've been reading some things on the stealth virus related stuff, and the cellular energy pigments that they're calling these, And I read one thing where they said that there is actually a plant gene that has gotten into the patients. And it just sounds all very, very Twilight Zone-ish, you know?
Well, the thing is, I mean, you know, people, you know, if you go on the Internet, you can find it's a disease from Mars, it's a disease from outer space. I mean, this is the pattern of not knowing about a disease.
Mm-hmm.
What we look at is that regardless of whatever it is, origin, it's treatable, and we've detected it as a parasite. Now, it's certainly an unusual parasite, but it bears a relationship to other known parasites, and will tend to respond to very similar medications.
Yeah, and that's an interesting thing, too, because when you and I had first talked, you were saying that people had tried all kinds of alternative treatments and they weren't working, including the Rife machine and the Vibe machine and the zappers and things like that. And at that point, I was asking you if it was because this thing keeps changing form so much. And it seems like if this is just a regular parasite, then we should be able to get rid of it fairly simply with natural means also. So I guess what I want to know from you is what's the update on this stuff? You know, what have you discovered in the meantime?
We've discovered that after a whole range of natural means, people get worse and worse until they finally use of standard pharmacologic therapies, and suddenly they begin to improve dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
I got a call just yesterday, a 22-year-old woman, a young woman, had to drop out from school. She took and completed all of her courses, covered with lesions. People think she has AIDS.
Oh,
she had already had her neck, two vertebrae, had degenerated.
Wow.
And here's at the age of 22, and this is all related to the same condition. Now, she had tried a whole bunch of natural means and had been unsuccessful. I think those who take the path of the natural means are able to subdue it for periods of time. For example, mm-hmm. the organism loves sugar. Mm-hmm. So these people go on this non-sugar diet, and they think, oh, great, the creepy crawling has is slowing down and I'm really getting some benefit, but the fact is that what they're doing is forcing the organism into the muscles and the bone, where it then insists and does its dirty work.
Yeah, you know, I just saw someone recently who said that she was diagnosed with cysts on the liver, and she's got a gazillion different things wrong with her. And of course, I'm sitting here looking at her thinking, it's got to be Morgellons, because there's just too many things wrong, you know, too many other organisms and everything else. And these people get so very, very ill. And I can tell you, listeners, you know, Dr. Schwartz diagnosed me when he came into my office, and I said, what the heck is this thing on my leg that nothing is working on? And I had the larvae that were kind of, they were dead, but they were in my skin. And now it's healed up since I did the pharmaceutical treatment. And it wasn't a terribly fun treatment to do, but it did make me feel better by the second dose of the Biltraside. So that was proof enough for me that it's actually working.
Yeah, well, the response tends to be dramatic to medication. There is a particular preparation, which is a cream-like preparation, a veterinary preparation containing a combination of praziquantel, which is the Biltraside, and another medicine called ivermectin. And the horse is supposed to ingest it, you know, in a big bolus. It's for horse worms, but instead, people have been using it as a skin cream with rapid healing of the skin lesions. However, the skin lesions, as I said, tend to be just the least of the disease because of its tendency to go deep into the liver, into the spleen, into the intestines, and into the bone, and into the central nervous system because, you know, central nervous system signs, I mean, people call it brain fog or confusion or whatever they wish to call it, mm-hmm. but it all is related to the presence of a parasite in the central nervous system.
Yeah, and that's incredibly scary because it's very hard to treat that once it gets into the CNS and into the brain. I found there are people who have been coming into my office, and I've been checking them to see if they have this, and every single person that I've tested has it, but they don't want to be treated because they're not showing anything other than the diagnostic thing, you know, the clay in the diatomaceous earth. And I'm kind of looking at them and I'm going, you don't want to be treated? And they're like, no, I'm fine. I feel fine. And, you know, I don't have anything on my skin. And I just kind of shake my head and go, okay, you know, but they don't seem to get it. I try to tell them, you know, if you've got this stuff inside of you and these little worms and things are crawling around and they're eating through your vasculature, you can bleed to death internally.
Or at least you can get severe anemia. Or as said, severe bone damage, or it can be indolent and with a chronic condition of chronic fatigue and unexplained rashes intermittently. You know, we've had a number of very interesting findings. For example, one lady had a 15-year history of so-called fibromyalgia.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is an unknown disease without question. A lot of people have it. They end up taking pain medication sometimes to the point where they have a serious addiction because of the pain. Well, once we began the condition, so-called Morgellons condition, with the antiparasitic, lo and behold, the fibromyalgia began disappearing in many of the patients,
uh-huh.
leading us to believe that a parasitic infestation may account for at least some of these cases of fibromyalgia, which certainly is a common enough diagnosis.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's kind of the junk diagnosis, you know, like CFIDS was a few years ago. Same thing, and I find that it makes perfectly good sense to me that fibromyalgia would actually be caused by a parasitic organism because they go into the muscles.
Yeah,
so
the system, the muscles. Well, it was just our finding that in the treatment we've had a tremendous reduction in that particular symptom, and other strange relief of multiple sclerosis, for example.
Wow.
Well, we can't really explain that. But we've seen the use of antiparasitics cause tremendous relief of multiple sclerosis. Now, one of the strange findings, and we haven't been able to, you know, there's so little research being done, and the research that's being done is mostly junk research.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it costs so much money to do research.
Well, so far the CDC is behind the CDC is the government agency really responsible for looking at communicable diseases, and this certainly is one. They've so far not put any real resources behind the investigation. Although this might change fairly rapidly because one of the C- CDC people. Her son called me from Holland with this condition, and he's coming to the United States, and this will, you know, kind of raise the consciousness of at least some subgroup of people in the CDC. So far, as I said, I mean, since we've treated well over 100 patients with 100% success, and I say 100% success, and that everybody has improved, I'm not saying we cured. We can cure probably in the early stages, but after a period of time, it's very, very difficult to cure.
Well, yeah, because how are you going to reach them when they're already in the CNS and they're in the bone and they're in the brain?
Well, we're working on it. Mm-hmm. We have a whole variety of new medications that we're trying. But so far, the natural means have been really unsuccessful.
Yeah, and that's really a concern. And, you know, as a naturopath, one of the things that I do is I normally do a parasite cleanse once a year. And most of us do, because we understand that everybody has worms and different things. It's on the food that we eat. It's in the air that we breathe, especially if the wind's blowing. You know, it's in the dirt. It's everywhere. And that was the scourge of mankind, you know, back in the biblical times, too. So most of us that know this kind of stuff, we go ahead and we do a parasitic cleanse and, you know, usually a fasting cleanse at least once a year to get rid of those kinds of little critters. And I can tell you, listeners, that when I did my first big intestinal cleanse, I had three or four different types of worms that came out of me that I had no idea I had. And that really made me sit up and take notice, and that's one of the things that actually brought me into naturopathic medicine. And I had done my parasite cleanse, I guess maybe a couple months before I met you, Dr. Schwartz, and I was just, you know, having this strange thing on my leg and going, what the heck is this? And I normally heal super fast. I wasn't healing. And I said, okay, this is really odd. I went and had ozone put into it, and I had ozone intravenously because I was feeling it systemically. As soon as I got the ozone, all the systemic effects went away, which was interesting. But it didn't do anything for the lesion. And we kept trying that and tried different creams on it. Everybody said, oh, I've got this cream that'll work. And nope, nothing worked.
You know, one characteristic is that the people become poverty-stricken because they spend hundreds and thousands of dollars on preparations that have been, you know, developed, and I'm sure they're well-meaning, but there are people who have jumped upon this disease with whatever potion they have, mm-hmm. which is really not effective and not tested, but people spend money by the hundreds because the disease is so severe.
Oh, yeah, and what they really need to do is take care of first things first. And kill off the parasites and get them out of the body. And, you know, I can't stress enough, listeners, that if you've got this or you think you might have it, you need to get diagnosed and you need to take care of it immediately. Because
so far, the medical profession, though, has been so reluctant to get involved in this. It falls outside of the box.
Oh,
unlike
yeah.
with any new disease, and I don't find it that unusual, but it's a new disease without a standard of treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So when you speak to a physician, who's quite well-meaning, for example, and you start talking about, you know, how to treat this, and they say, never use those medications. This is outside of my experience range. I better refer it to somebody else. And we've had patients who've seen at least 20 to 30 doctors and gone through the Mayo Clinic and, mm-hmm. and the, you know, the great centers of excellence of our time, but literally they're befuddled by this particular condition.
Oh, yeah. Well, I told you about that lady that I had in my practice the year previous. And she had been to the Mayo Clinic and seen the head of dermatology there, and he wouldn't even look at her lesion. She had it under her chin, and her habit was that when she was gardening and she got tired, she'd just lay down on the dirt and go to sleep. And I said, you know, there's a reason that humankind got up off of the dirt and started making beds and houses and things, and it was to escape bugs. And she said, oh, you know, I didn't know that. Well, she kept pulling these things out of her chin, and they were little brown fibers, kind of tan-colored, and they looked like little tiny worms, but they weren't. Just fibers, about maybe quarter of an inch to half an inch long, and thousands of them, and then little things looked like little tiny cocoons, about a quarter of an inch long, like, you know, white cocoon things, cottony kind of. And she said, well, she said, I went in, and she said, these dermatologists, every one of them, have said that I have delusional parasitosis, and they gave me Wellbutrin.
And what an insult.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just such an insult to...
Yeah,
four people.
And charged her too, and
children in the background.
Yeah, and
we know there are so many children in our life.
Yeah,
but that's one of those.
Yeah, but I told her, you know, you can still be crazy and have worms. You know.
Well, the point is delusional parasitosis is a disgusting diagnosis.
It is
given because of confusion amongst physicians who are more delusional than patients. Because if they bothered to investigate the disease, they would be startled buy it and would have to reach a certain point where they would have to begin to understand it. And
yeah.
So far we've not been successful, that successful in getting physicians to really investigate or begin to treat it. But some are beginning to understand. That's
yeah,
one of our particular missions.
Yeah, I think that we need to get the word out more. I was reading some stuff on, I think it was Oklahoma State University. There's a couple doctors over there that are trying to get the word out, too. And you know, one of the things that I tell my patients right off is it's okay to go to a dermatologist, but make them take a sample and send it out. Now, I took samples, and I sent it to two complete different labs, one in North Carolina, Great Smokies Diagnostics, and then the other one that's in Scottsdale, which is headed by a guy from Egypt who's seen pretty much every parasite in the world. Both of those places sent me back the report that it was Blastocystis hominis, and listeners, that's a pathogenic form of yeast that they've said is now responsible for a lot of, you know, heretofore unknown etiologies of diseases, and very common diseases, too. And as soon as I treated her for that, the lesion healed up. Now, that was not the end of the story. She never came back the next week, and I found out that she had gone into the hospital in anaphylactic shock and had basically started bleeding internally and was in ICU, and nobody knew what was going on. And, you know, I didn't know about Morgellons at the time. And so now I'm looking back and going, oh, my God, she probably had Morgellons disease, and nobody knew it.
It was quite possible. We've seen and heard reports of quite a number of deaths, and we've seen people in such critical condition that they were near to death. One of our patients had throat lesions from which were erupting eggs and larvae just about obstructing the respiratory tract. And pneumonic. Now, one of the things, I mean, you know, you talk about a communicable disease, and it certainly is that. How people say, how is it transmitted? Well, there's a variety of ways. We've seen a situation like in Idaho Falls. I use that example where one family lived in a house and all of them came down with this condition. They moved out 3 months later. Another family came in and they all became affected by the condition.
Oh, wow.
What was characteristic of this house is that it had once been flooded. So that appears to be a pretty consistent finding. Water-based organism finding a home in some sort of water environment.
Mm-hmm. And do we know what the organism is?
Well, we know that it's a parasite, and in terms, it's not a known parasite. It's not described in our literature, and it needs, you know, I mean, basic investigation. We know that it is a fiber, a thread-forming organism. We know it bears some relationship to a crustacean. We know it bears some relationship to a schistosome or schistosomiasis, and it may well be a hybrid of the type that has come out related to global warming. And there are so many unknowns about this condition. But regardless of the unknowns, we have discovered effective treatment, which is probably the most critical element, that regardless of its cause, I mean, it is a treatable condition, and people will have remarkable improvement in a matter of weeks.
Now, when I talked to you last about this, it was a 12-week treatment with three warmers and an antibiotic and one antifungal, wasn't it?
Yes. Well, part of the reason for the antifungal is that there's so much debris underneath the skin. One of the diagnostic tests is the use of diatomaceous earth, which is mixed with water and then coated on the skin, and out comes all sorts of black dots and eggs and things under the subcutaneous tissue which emerge out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that means there's all sorts of literally debris. And this debris tends to attract fungus. So while the disease is not caused by a fungus, at some point in the treatment, we have been using antifungal medications because we believe the fungus comes secondarily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, opportunistically.
Yeah, it just happens to come there because there's a lot of debris, there's a lot of waste. Now, one of the reasons for the antibiotics is that the lesions tend to become infected with a variety of things. Originally, I cultured a very rare bacteria called Stenotrophomonas multifilia, relative of the Pseudomonas family.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, aha, this is causing it all. But I rapidly realized that this was just a bacteria which was just infecting the lesions.
Mm.
Because since that time, we found methicillin-resistant Staphylococcal aureus, the feared MRSA. Mm-hmm. We found a variety of organisms affecting the lesions. One of the problems also is that we're dealing now with a parasite, and this is not a microscopic, it's a macroscopic, you know, that you can see it.
Oh, yeah, I saw the little things on my leg, and okay, listeners, now you can go, ooh, it was really gross, especially to see it on yourself, you know, and you could see them. They looked like little tiny larvae.
Well, and then as they grow, I mean, you find them all over, particularly in the menstrual blood and a variety of other places, which, because they like blood and they like water environments.
But, well, I found little worms in this lady's ear.
Oh, the ear is another one of those places which caused tremendous problems. We've had one woman who became just about deaf. When the eyes are affected, too, the loss of night vision is striking, and then it's followed by a destruction of some of the internal structures of the eye. But yet it responds so dramatically to sulfur organisms and sulfur antibiotics.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, and one of the reasons why the antibiotics is because the organism also tends to have within its own digestive tract bacteria.
Yeah.
Now, one of the findings of the old researchers who did electron microscopy on the worm-type diseases is found out that the worms have digestive tracts.
Mm-hmm.
And in the digestive tracts, there are a whole variety of bacteria. And many of these bacteria are, you know, common, some are uncommon, and some are even spirochetes. Now, a spirochete is a particularly interesting bacteria because it's all curvy, and it happens to be the type of organism which causes the disease we call Lyme disease.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the association of the so-called Morgellons disease with Lyme disease has been made many, many times, and yet the people don't report a tick bite, and we're wondering whether the presence of the spirochetes within this so-called Morgellons organism is actually producing a Lyme disease.
Yeah, now that's an interesting point. And, you know, Lyme disease in itself is horrifying because of the spirochetes that go to the brain. And, you know, like most of these people that I've talked to, they've never had the target lesion or any history of having a tick bite. And you know, I haven't. And none of the people that have come into my practice, you know, for other reasons, have had any history of any tick bites at all, and yet every single one of them has shown all the debris. You know, when I put the diatomaceous earth on their skin, it pops right up, and I show them. You know, I put some down on a flat table at the same time and tell them, well, look, here's the difference. You put it on the flat table, there's no little black specks and there's no little bubbles. There are no little round bodies that come out. You put it on your skin, here's what comes out.
Yeah, well, that's a diagnostic test. It's also therapeutic in the sense that people who who bathe in this diatomaceous earth find that all sorts of debris comes out because this organism leaves this debris, which overwhelms the immune system. It literally overwhelms it. It's just too much junk for the immune system to handle.
Yeah.
So that's what we've been able to discover. Now, what is clear to us at this juncture, and if any of your listeners are aware of this, this disease is spreading like wildfire. I've gotten calls from a place I've never even heard of, from Tasmania, from Australia, certainly I've heard of Australia, but Tasmania is a little bit off the map, from New Zealand, from England, from Germany, France, from Romania, from Russia, from the Netherlands, literally a world, from China, in fact, although I must say that information from China has been put onto a bit of a subdued level. I'm not sure what's going on there. But there's been fewer information. There's some evidence that it may have even started in China. One of the findings, I mean, we were very fortunate early on to have a patient who had something called hair extensions. And most women know about such things. Most men don't. These are when you want to kind of interweave new hair to give the hair a fuller look and a longer look. And this lady put on the hair extensions. They came from the Orient. As I recall, they came from China. And then, over the next several weeks, she developed the so-called Morgellons disease, and we were able to see we had a date certain of the application of the hair extensions, so therefore we were able to see the progression of the disease. We were able to see how it started with, you know, a little rash. How about 2 to 3 weeks later, we began to see the fibers, the pus, bit later we began to see the creepy crawly, and then a little bit later we began to see the white globular substances of the eggs. And, you know, as time went on, we were able to see the progression of the disease over perhaps a 2 to 3 month period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the treatment for it is not an easy treatment, as you know.
Yeah.
But it is effective, and it's the use of, you know, very traditional anti-parasitic medications, including one called praziquantel, which is known in this country as Biltricide. In Mexico, it's called Cisol. It's or praziquantel for parasito, which is, you know, I don't, my Spanish is not up in the parasite world, but that's one of those areas where people are much more familiar with that medication. It also responds to ivermectin, which is a medication long used with parasites. When the mouth is involved, we've been using the chewable mebendazole tablets,
mm-hmm.
which seem to be effective, because I think preservation of teeth becomes an absolutely critical issue.
Well, yeah.
Because, as I said, I mean, one of the patients, a 41-year-old woman, a former beauty queen, a model, literally is toothless now, and, you know, requires a great deal of care. I mean, this is embarrassing. Her livelihood is gone, and she's just barely, you know, suffering to stay alive. The organism tends to leach the neuropeptides from the nervous system, resulting in severe depression and mental disturbance. And as a result, along with the doctors who are kindly calling her, these people delusional, the families tend to abandon these people. They run out of money, and they just don't know what to do. They're kind of desperate.
Wow.
They end up praying, in fact, and then so many times I've heard the same story, you know, where a person calls me and says, I prayed, I finally gave up, and the next morning, Dr. Schwartz, I found your name, and I knew you were the right one to call.
Mm-hmm.
So it's enough to make you, you know, believe in the direct action of prayer.
Oh, yeah, well, that's mine was quantum physics. You know, I was in my quantum physics chamber, and I said, I need some help, you know, like, what's going on here, and, you know, why have I got the weight problem, and, you know, I eat really healthy, I do everything fairly healthy, what's the deal here, and, you know, what is this thing on my leg, and 2 hours later, you wandered through the door. So,
well, that was a very strange thing, wasn't it? I mean, where I just happened to wander through the door, and the other thing is, I had just finished, you know, one of the things, I wrote a book about it, which is called Monosodium Glutamate, MSG. Now, everybody, they know about such things, and they usually don't, because it's now found its way into a variety of foods under the natural flavoring or hydrolyzed protein.
Oh, yeah.
And it affects me just dramatically. And then, as I recall, I had taken something with MSG, and I was barely functioning at the time.
Oh, yeah, your eyes were rolling back in your head, and you were staggering and slurring your speech.
Well, yeah, it causes enormous, you know, changes in many people's migraine headaches, and other people, balance difficulties, a very toxic drug.
Yes.
So at that time, as I recall, I said, I think I'd better come back later, because I was not in shape to do too much at that time. I mean, that's just an aside, so I did write a book about monosodium glutamate, and, you know, we got 100,000 letters and calls from people whose children had been in classes for the emotionally disturbed and hyperactive kids.
Oh, yeah.
And we came to the realization that our society has created sub-industries to treat adverse reactions to things like monosodium glutamate.
Mm-hmm.
That's just an aside. For example, you increase the MSG level of food, you increase the behavioral disturbance in children, and then you increase the number of people who treat kids with Ritalin or some other medication. Mm-hmm. You treat the number of educational specialists who are then treating the kids, and instead of coming down to a root cause, which is this particular drug and the food.
Oh, yeah, and I have to tell you, listeners, when Dr. Schwartz came in and I realized he was having an MSG reaction, I put him in the quantum room underneath the negative ion shower, and it cleared it in like 2 minutes. That was really interesting. I didn't know it could do that. And I watched the clearness, you know, come back into your eyes, and you know, it was like you woke up. So I think that...
Well, it certainly had an effect, and as I said, the MSG is a toxic drug. And that's how I happened to write about it, is because, I mean, I knew the adverse reactions, actually, all of my children. It tends to be a genetic dominant trait,
mm-hmm.
so that if like a mother has it, her children tend to have it as well.
Oh, yeah.
But that's kind of off the subject.
Well, it all kind of goes together because we have so many things affecting our bodies now. And, you know, my theory is that one of the reasons that these organisms are able to invade us and live so happily is because we have poisoned ourselves with all these little modern things that we do that we have trusted the people in charge to make sure are safe, and they aren't safe. And then you throw global warming on top of it. You throw the great pollution that we have on top of that. And then you throw the upheavals that we've had in the earth and all these new microbes coming to the surface that we haven't seen for centuries, maybe thousands of years. It just all makes sense that this would come out. And now the question is, of course, what do we do about it? So, I mean, I, for one, am really happy that we have a pharmaceutical way to get rid of it, even if we can't do it.
We don't get rid of it. We mm-hmm. can control it at this point. I mean, we can have effective treatment. Cure is very, very difficult. You take this woman whose spine collapsed, and she's going to need intensive treatment over many, many months. There's no model of rapid cure that you can look at. I mean, it's almost the only model you look at is osteomyelitis, which is, you know, an infection of the bone, which requires months and months of an intensive treatment regimen.
Oh, yeah.
We cannot cure this condition yet. We can, however, we can reduce it. We can control it. We can give people a great deal of hope, and we can make them functional, but we're not at any point anywhere near cure at this point.
Yeah, and I really wonder what that's going to take. I mean, you know, from my way of thinking, you know, if we know that this is there and we know that it's common, then this may be something we need to do once a year to clear all these little buggers out and you know, give the body a chance to, you know, to recover from this stuff. And, of course, you know, pharmaceuticals are not harmless. So, you know, then you're dealing with all kinds of side effects from that you kind of need to watch. And, you know, it's just it's kind of a vicious cycle. So I'm really hoping that enough research funds get donated to this cause so that we can actually find a cure for it and kick out the parasites once and for all.
Well, the donation to the cause is really a funny thing. Yeah, I've been noticing that, you know, the funds go wherever the power sources lay mm-hmm. or lie. And a tremendous amount of funds have gone into the Asian flu or the Ebola virus or one of these kind of, you know, things that we don't see, we don't hear. And yet right before us, we're witnessing a virtual epidemic and, you know, and virtually no funding is going to that. And then, of course, the people who are doing some research, and I don't like to put down anybody, but I try to call those folks at Oklahoma State University and I mm-hmm. send a couple of calls. So I'd love to talk to you about it and kind of compare notes, and there was never a call back. I guess they're just overwhelmed with calls, and I can understand it, but that's no way to, you know, conduct a research effort. In other words, you need to start getting people together, sharing information. I think we're about a decade away from really doing that, but my feeling is that this is a leverage point, and it's almost like, you know, how do you move the world? You know, I mean, how they used to say, how do you move a big boulder? Well, you find yourself a fulcrum, you find yourself a little bit of an area, and you use a leverage. This is a leverage point to understand how we are creating global warming, how we are polluting our planet. You know, there's scarcely a place which is in tremendous effects of pollution over many, many years. So because of that, we've had many, many years of pollution, many years of the so-called global warming, whether it's due to man-made or some natural cycle, but regardless, we're seeing a lot of melting.
Mm-hmm.
So as a result, Valerie, I see at this moment a pretty discouraging picture. I see very little optimism for Morgellons disease, except the optimism that we can effectively control it, but that we cannot cure it, except perhaps in the earliest stages.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to cure it, we're going to have to really understand it. Now, I mean, it bears relation to a crustacean. It bears relation to a jellyfish or a Portuguese man of war, you know, that sort of thing. It bears a relationship to schistosomiasis, which is a disease affecting hundreds of millions of people worldwide. But in terms of exactly what the parasite is, exactly what it can do, we're still a long way from that. I mean, I see right now, there is no optimistic view to be seen.
Boy, that's pretty scary stuff.
Well, it's designed. I mean, things aren't designed, but it will serve as a wake-up call See, right now we've got clusters. I mean, I got a bunch of folks from Knoxville, Tennessee, of all places, a bunch of folks from New York City, a bunch of folks from Pennsylvania, calls from California, Florida, Texas. I mean, you know, kind of areas in which there are large outbreaks.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, it's just a matter of time until this begins to affect our legislators, our representatives, our, you know, people who are in a position of power. And at that point, when they realize that this is a disease affecting them as well.
Oh, yeah, then we'll see some movement.
And then we'll see a lot of movement. Of course, the usual direction is to pour the money into universities, which have characteristically frittered it away. But regardless, there may be some, you know, some hope on the horizon. I don't mean to be unduly pessimistic, but what I see is people who are suffering enormously from this disease, who are getting worse and worse, whose doctors have abandoned them, who have gone to 20, 30, 40, even, you know, I mean, doctors, people who have money enough to afford the finest health care in America, being turned away and told that they're crazy.
Yeah.
And so it's, the horizon, the short-term horizon seems pretty bleak. Now, we've written a book about it, and we're getting together this book. It's not yet published. All that is known and all of, you know, the effective treatments and all the research that we're doing, because we can offer the hope of, you know, effective treatment in the short run. Mm-hmm. But in terms of complete elimination from the body, we're not there yet.
Yeah, I know. I'm looking at it, you know, from the natural point and saying there's got to be some way, because if it is any kind of a natural organism, then there has to be a way to treat it naturally also. The question is, you know, how much time do you have to do it, and, you know, how do you deliver the substance, just like pharmaceuticals. And, you know, and I really believe that a lot of the decline, it has to do with the, you know, the environment as well as what we're putting into our bodies. And, you know, then there's the electromagnetic waves that we're all subjected to. I mean, there's so many variables that it's hard to say, you know, what actually caused this to come out suddenly. But the global warming thing certainly seems like a viable theory to me.
Well, that's the current theory we've been working on. It. This is not an organism from Mars. This is not an organism from, you know, outer space. This is, in fact, an organism which has been here before, mm-hmm. that is now here again, and is associated with the massive pollution, with the global warming, with the with what we've done to our oceans. You know, we went swimming over there around Sarasota, and we always saw were dead fish, and the water smelled terrible, and it was slimy, and it made everybody cough, and they said, oh, it's just the red tide. And I looked into what is a red tide, these little dinoflagellates, you know, these tiny little organisms sucking the oxygen out. And I thought, I mean, here we have a massive amount of area with organisms dying, with red tide, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And an effort is made to clean it up, but barely an effort which takes care of all the pollution which we're continually adding to it. You know, we're all connected. I mean, the Earth is connected.
Absolutely. No question about it. And, you know, you look at the environmental disasters that we've had of late, you know, with the hurricanes and the tsunamis and the Earth moving all over the place and the volcanoes. And, you know, there's been such Earth movement that maybe these things have been buried for a long time and now they've come out. And, you know, they're finding the environment to their liking. So,
well, there's no question that they find an environment to their liking, and they cause a lot of destruction. Now, one of the good fortunes is that I've been working with a woman who's my nurse named Colleen, and she's a brilliant woman who has been able to identify a number of the life stages of this organism and has identified its crustacean roots.
Mm.
And that's particularly important because once one sees that, it's possible to start looking at other forms of treatment as well as the treatments which we've been applying. But when you realize, you know, so many areas have never had any sewage, you know, they've never had any sanitation plant. They've used the oceans as their toilet bowl.
Yes.
And the ocean can just take so much. When Jacques Cousteau had predicted in the 70s that in 10 years the Mediterranean Sea would be 95% dead, I didn't really get it. But my understanding is that he's right, that the Mediterranean Sea is, if not 95, then at least 80% dead, that the fishing has gotten deteriorated to an enormous degree, and that the sea has become dead. And I think that, you know, I mean, while our rainforests, you know, have been one of the great sustainers of our planet, even the rainforests are beginning to be eliminated through the use of the lumber and cutting. So what I see is a global catastrophe, of which the Morgellons disease is one condition which is calling attention to it. Now, one of the other things that's happening is that we're also seeing a virtual parasite explosion, which is actually the title of my book, because in the midst of looking only at Morgellons, one can't eliminate the fact that other parasites are beginning to come out. For example, most people are not aware that usually, depending on your area, at least 50% of the cattle are affected by sheep liver fluke, which is a worm, and it's in the meat. The only way they identify it is by looking visually at the liver. And if the liver looks grossly contaminated, they say, okay, bad cow. But, you know, cattle are major investments, and they're not interested in eliminating this, you know, major financial investment. Mm-hmm. And as a result, they've come to realize that the sheep liver fluke has now become endemic.
Yeesh.
And if you test people for antibodies, this you find it's very common among people who eat meat, because of half of our cattle, when they're treated with the so-called drench, I didn't know what that was, and someone said, well, they use an ivermectin drench, which is one of the medicines used to treat it. I just discovered they just drench the animals with the ivermectin, but they don't treat them internally. So we're dealing with a situation where one patient who I thought had the so-called Morgellons, in fact, had sheep liver fluke instead. And one lady who laboriously combed for her waist to find this characteristic leaf-like organism was, in fact, effective at finding it.
Wow.
Then, of course, you get to the issue where if that's her condition, and her son has it as well, but he has recently been diagnosed as autistic. Wow. And then, you know, you see this explosion of autism, and you wonder what's going on. How many of these so-called autistic kids may, in fact, be affected by parasites? And this is just a question, you know, I mean, I put it out as a question because we've seen, you know, the microcosm, that is the woman with the sheep liver fluke, the child with the sheep liver fluke, the diagnosis of autism and the aberrant behavior, and we begin to wonder how many people this really is reflecting.
Yeah, and that's a good question because there are so many things, you know, doctors are in such a hurry anymore and, you know, you can't be up on everything. And, you know, parasites are something that in America we tend to think we don't have. It's like, oh, those third world countries have that. You know, and the higher up you go in the echelon in America, the less likely people are to believe that they could even possibly harbor even one parasite, and they're usually the most infested because of that.
No, don't forget the massive immigration into this country from Mexico and from other countries, you know,
yeah.
In which a person in Mexico is likely to have, more likely than not, to have at least one of the three main, you know, worm parasites that are known.
Mm-hmm.
And then they come and where do we hire them? It's the food business.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore we're seeing this massive influx of people with parasites into this country and causing this enormous reservoir of new illness.
Well, we had enough parasites to begin with, you know, and people don't even realize it. You know, every time you go out to eat, you know, my question is always, I wonder how well washed this salad is. You know?
Well, that's a very good question. Of course, watercress and those other things carry the larvae of various organisms. The sheep liver fluke is known to grow in, you know, close to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the things where I believe we're witnessing the beginning of a parasitic explosion.
Yeah,
I must say, one lady who I just treated with, you know, four so-called Morgellons disease, have ended up with trichuriasis, which is a trichura worm, which I hadn't suspected initially until finally a worm came out and was able to be identified.
Wow.
In fact, this other man from Utah, a hunter, went out and hunted elk. Well, it turns out that 80% of the elk are affected now with a sheep liver fluke, and he was very happy that he finally had bagged an elk, and he made elk jerky. And from that, at the age of 35, he's a terribly sick man with degeneration of his bones and, you know, liver and spleen ailment and very serious. shape, responding to medication. Mm-hmm. But how many other people who are in similar situation are wondering? Like the diagnosis of chronic fatigue, whatever that means,
mm-hmm.
One of the characteristic problems is enormous fatigue from this condition. And it just makes you wonder if we begin to start looking at this diagnosis, looking at the parasitic diagnoses, how many of these people are in fact harboring one or more of the parasites.
Well, that's always one of my questions, and that's, you know, that's part of my training is we look for parasites. And, you know, the first thing I look for is the eosinophilia in the...
Now, you don't see that, though, in the so-called Morgellons disease. You just don't see an eosinophilia. The
no.
other thing is you don't see the parasites until you treat.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as you begin treating, the parasites start coming out. Prior to that time, you can go through the stool. Apparently, this parasite holds on to the intestines with very powerful hooks or suckers, whatever they use,
mm-hmm.
and they don't tend to come out. Now, we had a patient from Wyoming who... you know, had all sorts of stool exams, what have you, and they came up negative until finally he was treated with praziquantel, which is, and then suddenly, massively, worms came out from every orifice. Now, this man had hundreds of lesions around his body.
Wow.
Worms came out, and we sent them to the lab thinking, finally, we'll have a diagnosis, and they said, you know, they came back saying, worm. So that's it.
I mean, there's
so
some
much.
Point where you have to laugh, isn't there? I mean, you know.
Well, I think so. I mean, I think that in a way, you know, I mean, we share this fragile planet. We've polluted the heck out of it. We've global warmed it, most likely, or something is happening.
Hmm.
And in the midst of that, we're getting a tremendous influx of disease, of which the so-called Morgellons disease is a tremendous deteriorating neurologic and systemic disease. Which has received so little attention. One of the great, you know, I mean, I'll take an opportunity, you know, to fully pulp it, so why not? But the, I mean, here, you know, I mean, you get the Gates Foundation and other people pouring money into the third world. Well, God bless them, but what about, you know, our country where we really are starting to have very, very serious problems? Such serious problems that in order to effectively treat these people, we're going to have to develop separate centers.
Well, you know what they need? They need good PR. You know, in a way, it'd be better to call them Martian bodies because then they'd get the PR they need and you'd get some kind of a response because people would be freaked out.
Well, maybe that's when one person said, hey, well, why don't we, you know, why don't we just say that the aliens who have come, you know, the reptilians or
mm-hmm.
one of the other aliens, the gray guys or one of these other so-called aliens have come and, you know, they like our planet and, I know they've decided to give us this disease to, you know, to get rid of us so they can enjoy our planet and maybe that would give us, you know, some good press. Well,
yeah, well, you never know. You need some PR on this, you know, that's
yeah.
the whole thing.
Yeah,
well,
I have
you
a
know,
problem
we're gonna...
with all the aliens, by the way. You know, I mean, I've always said, at least, I wish if these people were visited, and all, at least they'd bring back an ashtray or something.
Yeah, something, you know, leave us a souvenir.
Some little memento, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to sign off. It's been a great pleasure again. Thank you so much, Dr. Schwartz. And how can people contact you for more information?
Well, what they can do is contact me at drg Schwartz at healingresearch.org or Colleen Jill, ColleenJill at hotmail.com. And she's the person I've been working with. They're a brilliant researcher, and she is responsible for the use of the diatomaceous earth and many of the other tremendously useful techniques. And they can reach for Colleen Jill at hotmail.com or DRG Schwartz or run it at healingresearch.org.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And thanks for the update on what's going on. And listeners, if you have any questions, you can email Dr. Schwartz or you can drop me an email and I'll forward it. And what I'm going to do is...
Drop an email. Don't forget it, Colleen Jill at hotmail.com, because she can answer many, many of the questions.
Yeah, that would
about
be great.
The practical use. I mean, she developed the diatomaceous earth test.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, were it not for her, I would have been still in the dark and wondering what was that stuff. So I have to give credit where credit is due.
Great. So listeners can then contact her, too. Okay, well, thank you so much for being on the program.
It's been a pleasure. If I've been bleak, it's because I am bleak. All I see are people suffering enormously. I see deterioration of teeth, bone, liver, spleen, tremendous anemia. I see the ridicule of the medical profession.
Yeah, that's what gets me angry.
The tremendous harm that patients are going through. So right now, I see a bleak landscape.
Well, we'll just do what we can to reverse that.
Well, we start in the corner, as they used to say, you know, I mean, one of my wives. They used to say, if you really want to clean, start in the corner.
Exactly. Okay. So thank you so much for being on the show, and listeners, until next week, be happy, be healthy, and be who you really are.
Thanks, Val.